A good 10 minutes for our YouTube audience. Please subscribe to the page. Two game ones last night in the association. One blowout with New York, which we'll get to later. But Minnesota, how about your Timberwolves now? Minnesota. They take out the Spurs in game one in San Antonio. So, Ant, a big part of the story. There's a lot of different parts of the story that I'll get to here. I'm breaking down game one. Ant was cleared. We kind of found out day of, still like a lot of uncertainty of like what's going on. Is he actually going to be able to play here after getting so much treatment after that left knee injury? He was cleared. He was on a 25-minute restriction. He played 25 minutes. They brought him in off the bench. They had to stagger him a bit in the fourth quarter, even though he went crazy in the start of the fourth quarter. So they kept it right at 25 minutes. Mike Conley, his teammate, said after the game, quote, "No one expected him to play. If we remember how the end of the regular season went and then this injury, he originally had a right knee injury that cost him 11 of the last 14 regular season games. This injury looked so bad when it happened. Lesser men's legs just blow up. Part of the benefit of being one of the best athletes in the league and being this young and the recovery part of it. But the original timetable for this injury was 2 weeks, which would have put his return at game four in this series. But there's just a very long list of how many things I love about Ant. We'll get to a couple of those possessions in game one, but there is a real sense, at least that's kind of what I got in reading John Krasinski and watching the postgame stuff. Like I watched a ton of the postgame from the feeds on NBA after the game last night because I just wanted to hear kind of like the sense of what these guys are talking about. And I think Ant is just that guy in that he loves his teammates and that he's so motivated to try to figure out a way to pull off this kind of upset that he was going to push himself to be able to come back. So he really wanted to play. I thought he was kind of slow at first, but slow in a sense where he was like easing himself into the game. And then in the fourth quarter, just incredible stuff. 11 points in the first 5 minutes. He had a Victor Wembanyama switch where he was on him and he wanted it. I mean, there's just something about this guy that is the wiring is everything you want in a basketball player, which I've obviously talked about so many different times. It was weird because he got Keldon Johnson twice during this stretch too. And then Keldon was screaming at him, "You're struggling." It's like now the fourth, he is not. So that was a big part of the win. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the matchups here. There was a Randle, because I'm always looking at like, all right, what are they going to do here defensively? And then what are some of the adjustments that we could be looking for? You know, once they start up game two, you're like, okay, well, that's different. But with Conley and Terrence Shannon being the backcourt for Minnesota, Castle, it's not important for Castle to be used defensively against one of those two guys. And, you know, I think Vassell holds up okay. Fox is probably more of a target. Champagne, depending on if you're talking about the Spurs starting five, which is all of those guys with Wembanyama, Champagne is likely somebody that's going to be a target a little bit more here defensively, but we're not talking about, at least in the non-Ant minutes, you're not talking about like this backcourt that you're going, okay, well, how are we going to slow these guys down? Although credit to Shannon for not having any turnovers with, you know, being asked to do a lot last night. Although it was kind of funny for Shannon. And some of these incredibly, like, he's this fast, downhill, dynamic, right? All the things that you want from a wing who can attack. It's almost like these guys have to go up against Wemby and get their shit blocked for them to understand that it's real. And that was twice in the first minute against Wembanyama. You're like, yeah, okay, I guess it is hard to score at the rim against this guy. But credit to him and so many of the other things, because this is asking a lot. It's asking a lot of Conley, who I would argue, you know, looks unplayable at times. And I think if everybody were healthy, if DiVincenzo and Ant are healthy and Io's healthy, I don't even know how many minutes Conley's even getting. It might be just out of respect for just a few minutes to throw him back out there. I'd expect if he has to play a lot of minutes that he'll continue to be somebody that the Spurs will prioritize attacking somewhat. But he made four threes. So, you know, you throw those 12 points into the mix on top of everything else because I don't know that you're ever really expecting that. Credit to Conley on everything else. But back to the Randle stuff, right? So because of everything that I just talked about, the Spurs are going to use Castle on Randle. And Randle, first half, you know, 9 points. He was 3 of 9. He got put in Wembanyama hell a couple different times where I was like, he might not ever want to take a shot inside the restricted area in this series because of it. But in the second half, 14 points, 5-11. And that's because Castle was dealing with foul trouble, which is a very important part of like the Castle part of a series is how are the officials going to officiate him? Because you could foul Castle out in the first half of every game. if you wanted to. And it's a credit to him that he just plays that tough. They're not going to call all these fouls. There's all sorts of on-ball stuff that he does that is incredible. And the other part that we know is like NBA, it's not even lore. It's just the, one of the commandments of the NBA is that the small guy always wins on the benefit of the call. And if you're a smaller guy playing against a bigger guy like Randall, you're going to get away with way more stuff. So this is even more of an advantage for Castle normally than a like-sized player, even a smaller player, right? Like if Castle's on Brunson, he's getting even worse whistle in that scenario. Randall, he's going to be able to get away with more stuff, and yet he still ends up fouling out. Again, there's a lot of like cross-matching, so it's not like all six fouls are on. I don't think they're all on Randall. So that means Randall much easier going on some of those matchups, especially some of the stuff that was happening with him late. He's getting Vassell. There's some play against Fox. He's got Keldon Johnson, who's just trying to like body up with him a little bit more. But Randall, when he's right, is so incredibly crafty off the dribble for a guy his size. He can start his dribble from really far away where it looks like other guys his size would get stuck if they start their offensive move 20 feet away from the hoop. With Randall, like the play is always still alive. Like the offensive options are still open for him. And then he hits arguably like the biggest shot of the entire night. And that was against Vassell because Castle was gone. So I don't expect Castle to foul out of every single game, but that was something that was definitely a big advantage for him. Minnesota, 52 points in the paint against San Antonio. Portland averaged 40 points in the paint in their series against them. And I thought San Antonio collectively, like that's one of the worst nights I've seen them have in a really long time. And yet you're watching it kind of still expecting that San Antonio is going to pull this thing out because you just aren't quite sure if Ant's going to give you what he ended up giving you in that fourth quarter. At least through three quarters, you're like, all right, well, I still don't know what they're going to be able to call on. And that's where Ant kind of puts the cape on. The Wembanyama matchup in this one, it was a lot of Rudy in the first half. Seven of his nine shot attempts in the first half were against Rudy. And in the second half, there was a play at the very beginning of the second half that kind of reminded me of like why teams don't want to put a traditional big center in Wembanyama, because we saw in the very beginning of this season, you know, which seems like forever ago, but also not that long ago, where he had that Dallas game where like, they put Anthony Davis on him and Wembanyama's coming into the season. And I wasn't even like kidding. I wasn't even like, it wasn't hyperbole. I thought that that game that Wembanyama played was one of the best basketball games I've ever seen from a player. And we saw the league quickly transition out of like, hey, we can't just put a big old center on this dude. We have to put a smaller, hopefully if we have that option on our roster, a smaller guy who's physically stout who can get into him to try to slow down some of these attacks. So there was a play at the start of the second half. It was the dunk to the left side. Rudy had an overplay in the first half, but there was a second half play where Wemby just drove right past him. And I'm like, okay, well, this is what we should be looking for a little bit more from him. And that's what you'd expect. And granted, Rudy's likely a lot better than everybody else's traditional center options. But then there was a little bit more Randall. The shot disparity of like, these are the shots against Randall, these are the shots against Rudy. It still is numbers wise, it's still more shot attempts against Rudy. I think most of the shots are pretty good. I don't love this habit of every coach and every player, and then it kind of is just everybody kind of buys into it, whether it's fans or media of that team, of like every time a team loses, like, hey, we like the shots that we get. And it's like, well, would you take 50 threes? And it sounds like I'm talking just about the Celtics right now. I'm not. There is a lot of that where I think sometimes it's just bullshit and it sounds like it's a good thing to say and everybody says it all the time. Having said that, of the 17 shots for Wemby last night, I think like 13 of them were pretty good looks. You could grade a little bit harder if you're talking about some of the threes going, hey, they should be thrilled that he's taking that three. So even though that three's open, that's not necessarily a great look. I think there's some marginal threes where I'm like, well, that's open, but it's not a good three. But I also don't think that like all eight of them are bad looks. And I also think Wembanyama had a couple possessions, whether it was the charge late where he was realizing like, hey, we gotta figure this out, where he got a little frustrated. There was an offensive rebound play where he had an attempt from like 7 feet out on the baseline where it could just tell he wasn't comfortable and kind of rushed it because there was a panic is way too strong of a word. But there was some pressing plays there from San Antonio of realizing like, hey, we might lose this game here. we're not playing very well. And I think Wembanyama had a couple mistakes off of that. Speaking of mistakes, De'Aaron Fox, yikes. And this is an awful game from him. Doesn't mean he's bad. It just means he had a terrible game. He was 5 of 14 with 6 turnovers. And welcome to Jaden McDaniels, man. I mean, Jamal Murray's watching it going, oh, yeah, this is kind of how it goes. And Jaden, by the way, offensively, a couple really terrific pull-up off the dribble, broken possession kind of stuff. And, you know, as somebody who hasn't loved him, because I just kind of was like, look, I don't always notice him all the time, because when it is Randall and it's DiVincenzo and it's Ant, there aren't going to be as many shots for him. And now I'm realizing, like, why he gets so frustrated, because there is a little bit more playmaking, not playmaking, I should say shot making on shots that look like there's just, all right, well, he's going to have to pull up mid-range here and make it happen. But he's so long that it's hard to contest a lot of this stuff. It makes me think, like, bigger picture, and this has nothing really to do with the series, but, you know, Jaden probably takes himself out of games offensively because he's annoyed he's not getting enough touches. And, well, it was just a thought that I had as an aside. So anyway, back to Fox. His first points of the entire game were early in the second half. The turnovers were bad. He even had a play where Wembanyama had a seal against McDaniels right in the restricted area, and Fox missed it entirely. So I don't know if Wemby and Fox are going to combine to shoot it that poorly again. I think that total numbers, 10 of 31 for those guys. I mentioned the pressing here a little bit. There's a feel of the game that all of us have when you're watching, right? Because I think, like a lot of people, I'm watching it. It's a close game at halftime. Minnesota's shooting it well. They're surviving with this backcourt. You're still not quite sure about the Ant part of it. I don't think this was like some all-time Rudy defensive game necessarily against Wembanyama. I don't think it's like the peak of what we saw against some of the Jokic stuff midway through that series against Denver. And you're probably just expecting San Antonio's going to run away with this thing. And then the game kind of shifts into San Antonio's down 8 with a few minutes left, and it felt over. And I even had to remind myself, it was a 7-point game with 3 minutes. Like, hey, this is still a game, despite how clunky and just no flow here with San Antonio whatsoever. Like, they could still pull this thing out. You get the turnover and the inbounds, you get a couple makes, and then it ends up being a 3-point attempt from Champagne. I love the no timeout off of the miss where they got to stop, I guess, on Randall. And they didn't call a timeout, and that would have been a game winner. So that's kind of how close this. There's a silver lining of this for San Antonio. It's like, do you realize how bad you looked last night based on your standard, and you still had a 3-point shot to try to steal this one? So there we go. 1-0 Minnesota. That is a tough, tough fucking team. But we have already learned that, especially after game 6 in closing out Denver. New York. I watched the film this morning again. Quick recap. Everything worked on offense. There you go. Now, Philly fans, I know you played 2 days ago and it was a game 7. New York last played Thursday. It's a real thing. It's an incredible, I'm not saying it's an excuse at all. It is a real thing. It would be dismissive. It'd be irresponsible to be dismissive of the schedule. So I imagine you're going to look a lot better defensively in game 2, because I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen here. I was thinking about the matchups. Are they going to put Embiid on Hart because they don't want him on Cat? We've seen that a lot against the way Cat is defended. I don't know if that's any kind of solution here whatsoever. If Cat goes quick with the ball, that secondary transition thing that I kind of talk about, it's not off a turnover and it's like a traditional fast break. It's just, hey, let's get the ball down and go, and not give the defenders a chance to settle in. If Cat goes quick, he's going to win that matchup. Embiid in the drop against Brunson, it's like they don't want to bring Embiid out. I totally get it. But, you know, credit to the Knicks for having Embiid at least have to move in these defensive possessions, because it was very clear that that was a priority. I don't, you know, the thing that I loved about what New York did is, it doesn't mean just because you're trying to put Embiid in some sort of defensive decision where the decision's always going to be him going backwards because he just doesn't want to show on this stuff. But it doesn't mean that it always works out to a great shot. And, you know, it's such a frustrating part of watching and thinking about Boston is like, if Boston got cut off from trying to do some of this Embiid stuff, it's like, oh, well, that's not going to work. Let's just not try it for the next 10 minutes. It's maddening to think how stupid Boston was against Embiid defensively in that series. All right. Maybe the last time I say that. Where the Knicks, it's like, let's just get him involved. And it doesn't mean that it's always going to be a wide open shot against Embiid, except it kind of was in that first quarter. There was an OG play where Embiid dropped against that, and Embiid's dropping to try to cut off OG on a drive, so he's not even thinking about the perimeter part of it. Like, he's making a decision, kind of like a hitter going, am I thinking fastball off speed? Well, I'm all in on one of these pitches, and that's what I'm swinging at. And if I get fooled, I get fooled. And Embiid on this one is playing it right because he's just not going to go out of the perimeter, and OG still gets the angle and finishes here. Let's look at Brunson's first quarter. He goes up against VGA. And it's not like a standard ISO because there was a screen involved, but it kind of allows him to reset ISO pull up. He gets VJ again. There's a 3-point miss in here where Embiid is already backpedaling off of the switch. Embiid's letting him, like he's showing him, because these guys, you've got to make the decision sometimes so quick and how the defense is playing it. You look at the feet. And then once you see the feet, you like, no. And then sometimes if you look at the feet and you think, okay, this guy's aggressively closing out here, so I just got to give him a little bit of a shake and then I'm going to be able to go because I can see where his feet are. It's something they tell you all the time, like look at the guy's feet. Embiid's already backpedaling, and that was a 3-point miss. There was another play where Mitchell's setting the screen, and Mitchell's somebody you can ignore unless he's really rolling really hard. And then you've got the lob part of this. Embiid's probably playing the lob here because it's Mitchell who you don't have to like go out to if he's just setting a screen up top. So he comes down. That's another wide open shot attempt. There's another drop by Embiid where it's a free throw line pull up and it's wide open for Brunson. There's another play where he beats Kelly Oubre. Another play, which is actually just a sick shot, a pull up against Paul George. It was actually a great contest on a 3-point. That was like one of the only shots that was actually contested. Brunson has 27 points in the first half. New York shoots 65 and 53% from the first half of the floor. So yeah, just a credit to New York. And it wasn't always that, but if you're going to put defensive attention to Brunson, and it's going to be a center, there's never really going to be a double team unless you want to do that to Embiid to have him come all the way out and blitz. So what I'm saying here is this is not a mobile center that's going to be able to change up like, hey, we're going to blitz Brunson a bunch of different times. Because if you do that, then it means Cat's playing 4-on-3. And then as we've seen throughout the playoffs here, OG as a third option has been incredible. He's making everything. And he's showing you that there's even a little bit more off the dribble than maybe at times that I've expected from him offensively. So basically these matchups, they're winning all of their matchups, or at least they won their matchups through the three quarters that they played in game one of last night. One final couple thoughts here real quick. Embiid drew 5 fouls in the first quarter. He drew 7 fouls for the entire game. I'm going to keep track of this, series. One might be okay. The one where Cat's arms are over, but Embiid's not trying to take a shot. He's trying to get the foul. I think 6 of them are bullshit. The 7th one is so gross that I would, again, ask the officials, like, okay, you're going to go back and review the tape. You're going to see the 7th foul that he got. Why do you want to give him this stuff? I'm sorry I can't stop talking about it. It's just because I can't believe the officials can have a game where it's like, hey, he's just getting tangled on the screen on purpose. The inbound play or the entry pass play to Jaylen Brown where he just falls down. It's like, all right, well, he got you. You fell for it. Why do you want to keep rewarding this kind of stuff? I think 6 of them are egregious. Again, the Cat one where his arms are over him and he brings the ball up. Fine. Dudes get that call, but he doesn't want to actually take a shot. So the reason I'm bringing this up, other than just sounding like a dick, which I understand some people are like, you just can't seem to get over this, is there's a basketball part of this that I think is important to understand, is that he will get so foul hunting in like focused in a game that he actually kind of stops playing basketball. And that's my issue, is that like, man, you're so good. Like, the fouls are going to come to you. Don't prioritize a foul over everything that you're doing. And you could argue in the beginning it was a good strategy because it gets Cat in foul trouble. You know, Mitchell Robinson is going to pick up a couple. There's some Mitchell Robinson stuff if they're going to hack him that, you know, clearly like is something to keep an eye on here, because the Knicks ended up pulling the plug on it after he missed a bunch of free throws in a very short amount of time. But the foul calling and getting foul five of these in the first quarter, and you're going like, all right, well, the math, we're going to be in the bonus. These guys are going to be in foul trouble. They're going to have to play a little bit differently. It leads to like Maxey standing around. Maxey took one shot in the first quarter, right? And that should never happen with Tyrese Maxey. So there's a basketball part of it where it's like everything's kind of slow for your offense. And yeah, you're getting to the free throw line, but like what is the priority? Are there matchups that you want to attack? Is there movement? Is there stuff that you want to do? I mean, Nurse is awesome at this stuff, by the way. Like Nurse is one of the most respected coaches in the league for some of the stuff that he does. But at least for a night in that first quarter, you're like, all right, well, he's getting to the line a lot here, but at the cost of what? Something to think about. Now, look, Knicks, big advantage on the travel, the time off, going into game one. You know, sometimes these game ones can be really misleading, but I think the first impression part of this is that there's a lot of matchups here for the Knicks to feel good about as far as what they did individually in their matchups last night on offense. We're going to punt on the mailbag today. Emails, NBA mailbag, rr at gmail.com. We'll bring in Cerruti here real quick. We got some reaction last night on the old socials.
Yeah, I just sent a screenshot to the boys, to the crew. You made some news on Twitter as well last night for a tweet that I didn't even see it until the morning. And I only saw it because somebody quote tweeted being like, look at this idiot, like Jokic defender. But you did send a tweet out. And that was, by the way, an OKC Twitter, too, which makes it even funnier. But the headline on the side of X this morning is Russillo calls for Jokic apology after Nuggets playoff exit. You tweeted, think some people owe Jokic an apology, ..
Dot, dot, dot was the three dots.
A lot of confusion. Three dots is the way to go, by the way. But a lot of confusion last night from people that just don't, I don't know, man. You'd think by now that people would understand, but I guess not.
Well, if you don't know who I am and you just see it, it's like, hey, who's this guy? He's got a bunch of followers.
Yeah.
Although if you don't constantly tweet, they like take your followers away from you. You have to like stay in the game. You know, you'd be like, look at this Japanese
wood. You lose it, dude.
Yeah. Seriously. You have to. So, yeah, I mean, I did it after Minnesota won game one. I did not mean it whatsoever. And look, I think all of it, 95% of it is fucking terrible. Like, I think it's a terrible experience to just spend all night like scrolling, seeing what people are talking about, because now it's like all propaganda. The guys that are just parasite accounts, I've talked about it before, they should all be banned. They offer zero value whatsoever. And somehow these guys make money off just taking everybody else's stuff or presenting these horrible arguments. Or the new thing is like the vague posting so that you have to like, oh, what is the answer? It's because I guess if you click on it, then that means that there's more engagement and all this different stuff. So I think the experience absolutely sucks. So if I can make it a little more sucky for everyone else by saying that Jokic is owed an apology because Minnesota won game one in San Antonio, it doesn't even make any fucking sense. And I don't believe that he's owed an apology whatsoever. If I can have just a few more, you know how people give a speech? It's like, if I can help just one person, yeah. I look at it as if I can just bum out one person that is in the game 24/7 on that feed, then I've done my job.
I don't even know that you're bumming them out though. Like you're just throwing red meat at, you know, a hungry lion, essentially, which are these people that just are dying for people like you to send that tweet out. Dying.
Yes.
Like dying. That, I think you made their day. They're like, yes, the Russillo tweet dropped. Yes. Let me fire up my response like that. I don't even think it's, I don't think you make them mad. I think you're just wasting their time, which I think is even better.
Yeah, I don't even think that it's trolling. I think trolling would be insulting to what I'm doing here.
Yeah, you think it's like a higher brow version of that, which I would agree.
I think if you know me really well, you get a chuckle out of it.
I did see, you know, for every, because, you know, you look at the responses and the quote tweets and it's all just like, this idiot, how could that possibly be the takeaway? He was just looking for the first excuse to give Jokic credit. And then there's one guy in there that goes, and it's not even like a definitive, like, I know Russillo's trolling. It's like, I'm not sure. Russillo's usually a troll, so this could just be a troll tweet. So it was a guy who wasn't even sure. So what, I don't even know what do you think your, hey, that percentage of the audience actually gets it? Is it five? It's probably lower.
Once it enters into the atmosphere of people that don't know who I am, which is a lot of people, they're just seeing media member, NBA guy having this thought. So
yeah, but I think there's, yes, it's I don't know you, but it's also the, again, I think people were like, you specifically sending that tweet out, people love that. People with that was like Christmas morning for some bad NBA people.
No, I was happy I could.
Yep. I could. Sam Russillo delivering the goods.
Grant their wish. I got what I wanted this Christmas morn.
Yep.
All right. I think we're done here.
Yep, yeah. Good stuff.
We're not taping a 10 good minutes on Friday. We're going to skip that day.
But we'll have pods, regular pods Wednesday, Thursday.
Wind horse Thursday, not Wednesday. So check out the pod. Thanks to everybody for helping out on our YouTube page. The Ryan Russillo Show, 10 good minutes, Barstool Sports.